Hello and welcome to Automators, the podcast about making sure that all of your devices do all of your things for you automatically so you actually maybe have a little less work to do in your life. My name is Rosemary Orchard and I'm joined as always by David Sparks. Hey David, how are you?
I am great, Rose. Super happy to talk to you. We are actually recording this, I think like 3 weeks after the last episode, so we both have been neck deep in betas, but Rose has been doing some fun things. So we haven't had our usual kind of like offline conversation. So I am on the edge of my seat. I want to hear how this stuff's working for you. I have thoughts. You have thoughts. It's time to talk about these betas.
Yeah, it is. And I went hardcore testing the betas just because I could. I went to Glastonbury Festival where there's no signal, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no power. And I used my phone and I was there with an act who was actually performing in the Circus Big Top. So I was there a bit longer than most people. I've been camping essentially in a field for a week with a solar power battery pack. So I could recharge my battery pack in the sun, which worked pretty well.
All right,
and I'm pleased to report, David, I did not run out of battery for an entire week in camping. I was really, really proud of myself.
We can't just leave it at that. So you had no power and you did everything solar.
I mean, I had multiple battery packs with me, which I did end up using in the end. But I had a solar power battery pack as well, which had like, it's got like a little solar panel on the front of it, but a single like small solar panel the size of a battery pack is not going to do a lot. And so this one had like a magnetic like clip on, which folded out like another three solar panels, which was pretty good. So yeah, I've been solar powered for a week.
What was the brand on it?
I will find a link if I can from Amazon and pop it in the show notes. It's just one I picked up that, you know, I spotted. It's not anything particularly amazing. It is a kind of like leave it out in front of your tent all day to repower this like 75% of the way job. Yeah. So yeah, it's not perfect, but at the same time, it worked. It got me through a festival. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Now, did you leave the solar panel out during the day? Like, so you were camping. Was it like out of a tent or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you would leave the tent and just leave the solar charging and then you'd come back and you'd swap batteries or plug overnight or whatever.
I tended not to charge my phone overnight. I'd plug my phone in, like, you know, when I was like inside or something. And most of the time, just kind of like leave the battery pack like out, like charging in front of the tent while we were back at the tent or similar. Because people need time to change and get into costume and makeup and stuff. So there was time to sit around and not do anything with that in the sun, which was quite good. But yeah, sometimes I just left it like on the tent or just in front of the tent out of the way and it recharged just fine.
And as I understand it, you guys have generally had a pretty sunny time over there in UK recently, but I know it's a big country, so I don't want to presume, but it's been pretty hot over there.
Yeah, it's been pretty sunny. That said, there has been a reasonable amount of cloud coverage as well. Unfortunately, not quite enough for me yesterday, so I ended up a little bit pink. You know what? I'm okay. I should have reapplied my factor 50 again. But aside from that, it's been pretty sunny, which has helped recharge it. But I have to say, if you've got large enough solar panels, you don't need like perfectly sunny weather. You can get away with cloudier weather or like slightly overcast. You don't want like dark and gloomy. That's not going to work. Slightly cloudy is fine.
Yeah, I have my kind of earthquake pack is a Jackery battery that would charge my phone for 2 or 3 weeks, I think. It's got a lot of power in it. And I keep that charged regularly. But they make a custom solar panel to go with it. It's $300. And I just can't get myself to buy it. You know, it's like, that's a lot of money. But if we had an earthquake here and I had power loss for, you know, more than 3 or 4 days, I'd feel really dumb for not having bought it.
Well, I mean, maybe you won't feel that dumb, David, because recently, like as in like the week before I went, Anker launched a new Solix range, S-O-L-I-X, where they're doing solar panels and battery pack combinations. And they're using a newer technology than the Jackery battery packs. So that may well be worth looking into their portable power station and solar panel combinations.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Well, there you go. So we already are costing myself and other people money.
Well, that's life.
Why, you know, is my loyalty towards Anchor justified? I feel like when they make stuff, I usually just buy their thing because it just feels like I've never had a problem. What's your take on Anchor?
I mean, personally, I find Anchor stuff is great. You know, it works. It's reliable. If there is a problem with it for some reason, you know, they're pretty good about sorting it out. And you can get it through Amazon. They tend not necessarily to have the best in class of things, but they're also pretty quick onto the market. So whenever, you know, for example, the MagSafe stuff came out, they came out with their MagGo line very quickly after MagSafe launched. So you didn't have to buy Apple's MagSafe battery pack. You could buy the Anchor MagGo, which is something like 3 times the capacity and only slightly larger. And so, yeah, I personally think the Anchor's great. I also like the fact that they do different color options and so on, which is just nice to have, for, this sort of thing. But yeah, like there are other options out there which may be, you know, better or best in class, but Anchor is just always a reliable go-to.
Yeah. And, if I'm looking at it right, the solar stuff from Anchor is not inexpensive either. I think there's just, you know, the stuff costs, like their 625 solar panels, $330. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's not a bad idea. As we're dealing with different weather conditions, not to have something set aside. I know that's not totally automator talk, but it does. It always comes up, and I feel like we should cover it. Either way, yes. So we did get down a little rabbit hole there, but sorry for that, my fault. But let's talk about these betas. What have you got installed where?
Okay, so I have the beta installed on my iPhone and my iPad Pro, my Apple Watch, and a spare MacBook Pro. Now, I've barely been at home in the last 2 weeks, so I was able to install Sonoma on my MacBook Pro and go, cool, that boots, that works. Hey, shortcuts are here. My shortcuts are syncing. Shortcuts appear to run, and that's kind of as far as I got with Mac OS. But the iPad and iPhone I had some more time with. I didn't take the iPad Pro with me for the last week. I took the iPad Mini. I wanted to have a little bit more reliability. So not running a beta and potentially, you know, battery life is always a concern when you're running a developer beta. And so having something that would stay connected to the internet because it didn't just overheat itself and run out of battery was definitely a priority there. But I'm pleased to say that my Apple Watch Ultra has been working really well on the beta and the battery life has not been terrible on it. So I've tried low power mode and having the always on display off and things like that as well to test that out. And everything seems to be working pretty well. What have you got installed where?
All the things, all the places, you know, I mean, I go crazy with betas every year. My production machine, which has changed since the last time you and I talked, Rose, I'm on a brand new Mac Studio right here.
Hey, nice.
My Mac Studio is talking to Rosemary Orchard for the first time as we record this, but yeah, that's cool. And that is still on Ventura. But the laptop is on Sonoma, the carry phone is on the new beta. The iPad is on the new beta. All the stuff is on the beta. I have one iPad that is on the old operating system because I'm doing some screencasting projects where I need to have that. But otherwise, I'm all in, baby. And generally having a good time. We're going to talk during the show about a few hiccups I've seen with automation during the betas. And we're very early in the beta period. I'm not recommending that everybody else do what I did, but it's not too bad. My biggest problem is sometimes shortcuts don't want to run on the Mac, and I haven't fully, they've been working since the beta 2 came out, but I haven't been spending enough time in it to say for sure that whatever was going on got fixed. But it is, it's nice. It's a pretty stable year. The battery life thing is absolutely true. It's true every year with the betas. It's, it's always shocking to me when we get to like September or late August and they start like dialing in the battery stuff for the final release and suddenly the battery gets so much better and everything. It's like, there's just a dial they can turn when they want. But right now I suspect the phone's doing a lot of reporting to Apple as it's getting crashes or whatever. And that really sucks down the battery.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And just like things are sucking down the battery, the devices are also heating up as well. I have been taking advantage of my Razer Chroma Cooler. So it's a little sort of MagSafe fan that you can stick on the back of your phone. It doesn't charge it. It's just a fan. But it essentially like cools your phone down. And I've definitely been taking advantage of that to be able to, you know, actually cool my phone down so that then, you know, it's not been super hot, especially as I've been outside so much. I've really wanted to avoid my phone overheating. So yeah, it's definitely been quite warm and the battery hasn't been the best. But you know, that is to be expected. This is the price you pay on a developer beta. All of the diagnostics and reporting back to Apple are completely necessary so that they actually know what's going wrong. But that said, I've had very few crashes so far.
Yeah.
You know, I have had crashes. I have a weird bug in messages where I'll type like a message to somebody, or I'll like try and start replying to a message to somebody and I'll get a keyboard, but then the message bar is like hidden underneath the keyboard or something. So I can't actually see what I've typed and I have to go out of the message and then back into it, at which point it magically reappears. But, you know, pretty much all the things I've run into have been usable.
Yeah, that keyboard one I've experienced too since day one with the beta. I think that's just something they haven't sorted out yet, but it's easily fixable. Just close the app and reopen and you're good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think that this has been a pretty stable year. I can't help but feel like Apple has done so much work over the years on the underlying stuff that now it seems like they're not doing as much of that. And as a result, things are more stable. Now they're doing more close to the surface changes with these betas. And that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does.
I want to note before we move on, this whole thing, you have a refrigeration unit for your phone. I didn't even know there was such a thing. Razer cooler.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know this was a thing either until I was on the Razer website. So a friend recommended Razer mice to me. So I have a Razer Basilisk mouse, which is great because it's got loads of buttons on it. It's got a little charging dock that it sort of magnetizes onto you to charge, which is what has like the dongle in, so it'll work even when the Mac is been asleep. Because as most folks will know, Bluetooth devices won't work when your Mac is has actually been like powered off. To like input a password or something, you have to use like either an Apple Magic Keyboard or a physically USB connected keyboard or a keyboard or mouse connected by a dongle. So the dongle Razer Basilisk mouse is great for that. But I was looking at that. And then I think I needed free shipping, or I was looking to get free shipping because I found their Snecky Snack, which is their adorable, cuddly mascot designed by one of their folks who was off on parental leave as like a snake for the kids, basically trying to explain what mom or dad does at work, I guess. And I wanted the Snecky Snack because it's adorable and snuggly, and was looking at it and was like, wait. They do a cooler for your phone? Huh. That's interesting. And thought, I'll buy it and try it. And it's come in handy a couple of times. You know, like when you're restoring to a new phone, one of the things that really slows down a restore is the fact that your phone gets warm. And if you keep your phone cool, then it will restore a lot faster. So by having the cooler, it actually allows you to restore your device faster if you need to. And also every so often, you know, your phone will just get warm for whatever reason. Maybe it's been sitting in the sun. Maybe it's trying to upload 693 pictures that you took over the last week to iCloud Photos, whatever it is. Being able to just slap this on the back and have it cool as it does whatever its thing is pretty nice.
Well, I do think if you're going to be on the betas, plan on carrying a battery with you or a solar charger or an iPhone air conditioner or all of the above.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to make a beta hat and it's like a cap you put on, but it's got a big solar panel like on top of it, like one of those mortar
boards. It's going to have to be a really big solar panel to actually be effective.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
Oh, well, then maybe a beta jacket, and it's a jacket made entirely of solar panels. Just think about it. Just
a beta backpack sounds better, to be all honest.
Right. Yeah. Of course, Rose comes in with the right idea. A backpack. But either way, make sure you carry a battery with you and don't put it on your phone if you need it to make your living, yada, 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 even though I did. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yes. All right. Yes, exactly.
So we're in these betas. Let's start with shortcuts. How's it going? What's working and not working for you?
So I did have some issues with shortcuts. To start with, shortcuts on my phone was just crashing. And thanks to a lovely listener of iOS Today, I was able to track it down to the great app Sofa. Now, to be clear, this is not the Sofa developer's fault. This is a weird thing that somehow just shortcuts broke when this app was installed. And the new beta that came out the end of last week has fixed this. So it's the beta that came out like a week, 10 days ago, if you're listening to this episode just as it releases. And so once I managed to find that and track that down and uninstall it and everything was working, some things still weren't working. Previously, I'd attributed all of my automations or the automations that were coming up with like a message to say that they'd failed to run as, well, shortcuts isn't working. So of course, you know, that the automation is not going to work, right? But instead, I found that there were some things that I just needed apparently to open the automation and that was fine again. And there were some other things where I was just doing a run shortcut and I decided that I was just going to take advantage of the fact that, you know, that some things weren't working right, and delete the automation, create a new automation that does the same thing. But instead of using the new workflow for iOS 17 is, which is blank automation using the run shortcut action, I would just run the shortcut directly. And that seems thus far to have solved my problems with automations. It's been interesting, like creating new automations and so on, and turning them off and turning them on again. Because previously you just have a toggle to disable your automations. And now instead what you have is an automation drop-down list, okay, essentially. So you tap on automation and it gives you the options depending on what's available for either run immediately, run after confirmation, or don't run, which is the disabled option that you had previously as a toggle. It's been interesting experimenting with that, but it's been pretty... thus far, smooth as far as these things can be smooth for me, David. What about you?
It's been great. It's been great, I say, but there's an asterisk. I was having trouble getting automations to run on the Mac. It seems to be going better now. But overall, I haven't had situations like in the past years where suddenly a bunch of my shortcuts were just busted and didn't work anymore. Yeah. So everything is generally working. And I think that we've had, you know, a less dramatic year with shortcuts in general, which is okay with me. You know, they were getting the platform, you know, switched over to the Mac after the purchase. Then they were getting it, trying to, you know, like dial it in, because it really was a 2-year project to get the shortcuts on the Mac to where it really needed to be. And now we're in a refinement year, and I think that's okay. And in general, the betas have been fine, and my shortcuts have not been breaking. And in fact, they have led me to some changes, which we'll talk about after the break. This episode of The Automators is brought to you by Electric. Turning a small business into an empire takes work, and you have to keep your ear to the ground for things that will help you take it to the next level. But this can be hard when your attention is pulled in different directions, because that's the reality of being a boss. The team over at Electric gets that businesses, maybe like yours, face these challenges. That's why they're on hand to help with the time-consuming parts of your business, like standardized device security with best-in-class device management software so you can implement best practices across the board and be ready to scale, and employee onboarding and offboarding done for you, saving you an average of 8 hours per request. Plus, Electric will help you keep a single point of visibility into your IT environment to control your devices, networks, and applications, while simplified reporting allows you to achieve and maintain compliance. And proactive IT recommendations and automated workflows make IT easy to manage for even non-technical users. And look, if you're hearing this and you think your company could use some of these services, but you're not sure where to start, Electric's experts will guide you through the process of establishing standardized IT processes for your organization. IT is something that is constantly moving, constantly evolving, and even if you understand computers and have a basic understanding of IT, you need professionals handling this for you. Not only does that ensure that you get the right advice, it also gives you time to do what you need to be doing. If you have a company and you need IT help, you should check out Electric. And for Automator's listeners, Electric is offering a free pair of Beats Solo 3 headphones for taking a qualified meeting. Just go to electric.ai/automators. Once again, that's electric.ai/automators. Go there now to get your free pair of Beats Solo 3 headphones today for scheduling a meeting. And our thanks to Electric for the support of the Automators podcast. All right, so I teased this. I know I'm not supposed to do that, but I did. We had the betas in, and every year the first concern is it going to break everything? And I think it generally hasn't. But then the next question is, well, how can I take advantage of the new toys? You know, right? Because we're automators. We want to automate more. To the extent Apple gives us more rope, we are going to use it. Rose, what are you doing differently with the new beta toys?
Well, specifically, the thing that I've definitely been doing the most is when you create an automation, instead of just, you know, creating an automation, having sort of a shortcuts like UI, you can select a shortcut to run. So I've been going through and making changes to all of that. But other than that, I have been doing my absolute best to leave it alone. Follow the if it ain't broke, don't fix it, because otherwise you're trying to fix this with really bad internet. Yeah, it's been one of those things where I've been playing a bit, like creating new shortcuts and creating new versions of shortcuts. But I've not been going too wild with it just yet. What about you?
There's a couple things. First of all, we didn't mention the prior segment, but we did say in our last episode, everything's running faster. That continues to be true for me. I have noticed a marked improvement of just the way shortcuts run it. There's not as much delay now. And I think that's a good thing. But I have been really re-exploring Stage Manager, because we got some Stage Manager automation. It's not a lot of automation, it's ability to turn it off and on. But I could see like a world where I would use Stage Manager more. It's not what I would call a power user feature, really. There are some limitations on it. But when I see these automation actions showing up, it makes me wish there was a little more control we could have over Stage Manager. Like, what if we could have sets of Stage Manager setups that could be saved and we could restore them? Kind of like a combination of Moom and Stage Manager. So I've been trying to kind of roll my own version of that by turning it on and then having Moom window setup saved that I can run. And there is an Apple script command to run a Moom setup. To run it out of shortcuts, you use the on run shortcut Apple script. You know, there's an Apple script action that has an on run command in it, but the actual shortcut is tell application open quote Moom close quote to arrange windows according to the snapshot, and then you put in the name of the snapshot, like mail processing or podcasting or whatever it is you do, and that has to be in quotes. And then there's another line that says return input. I will put a screenshot, if we can figure out a way to do that, I will put something in the show notes.
Well, what I can do is I'll put a link to the Bunch docs in here, because Bunch actually has this exact one listed in their Moom documentation section. So I'll pop that into the show notes and just note that that's the Apple script to run Moom.
Yes. So what I'm doing is I'm activating the Stage Manager. I'm arranging, and then I'm opening the apps that I want, and then I'm hitting a button in Moom. That does it. And I can open the apps also via automation. I've been trying to figure out a way to do this with shortcuts only. This would be a lot easier using Keyboard Maestro, because it gives you more granular control. But the combination of, you know, open app plus that Moom Apple script that you can embed in a shortcut gives me a way to assemble kind of setups the way I want them. And then they're just shown on the left side of the screen. And the idea of this is to allow you to focus on just what you're working on. Like, you could have all your communications apps in one bunching or group. And these terms are hard to use because there's so many apps using them now. But like a grouping of your comms apps, a grouping of your research apps, a grouping of your writing apps. And you just pick on the grouping you want, and then it automatically appears. And you're creating them via automation with a combination of the open app plus that Moom command. That was a lot of words. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think for me, the part that's really missing, at least from my perspective, is, you know, I've been using Stage Manager heavily on my iPad. I love Stage Manager on the iPad. It's great. At least for me, it works wonderfully. The part that's really missing are the shortcuts actions, because I can't use another app there to do this. I have to do it with shortcuts. Yeah. So I can open apps, but I can't open them and send them to a particular stage or put them in any particular place. The best I can do is open things in split screen or slide over, which doesn't really translate. And so I'd really love it if those, you know, could get updated at some point. That said, you know, I also tend not to need the same stages again and again beyond open these two things side by side, in which case open these two apps in split screen works just fine for me. So yeah, I'm doing okay with that. But it's still one of those things where it's, you know, it feels less smooth than it ought to / could. And I think that's just a case of, you know, the shortcuts folks don't have the access to the right hooks, and the folks that do have the access to the right hooks haven't created the shortcut support that's needed. So I'm crossing my fingers that will appear at some point, but who knows, that may be iOS 18, but as it is, at least on Mac, there's definitely some workarounds for that, which is great.
Yeah. And I really feel like the two like pieces of this that need more work is just what Rose talked about, window arrangement and management, which shortcuts on all platforms has some support for, but it's very rudimentary compared to what third parties are doing. And then the other thing that is kind of weird for someone who likes to do automation is you got to take the mouse like an animal. You got to push it on top of the grouping that you want and click the button. There's really no way to automate the process of saying, give me the communication apps. Now, people listening know that I've done videos and talked about this in the labs where I've done this with spaces. And it's very simple. You push one button, everything just happens. Your Mac rearranges itself. And they're saying, hey, Sparky, why are you even bothering with this? You've already solved the problem, at least in the Mac. But I think this stuff needs to be more accessible to people. And if we could get it with the built-in Stage Manager to be reliable and like make a shortcut someone could download and just run, I would love for that to work. And it's just not quite there yet.
No, that's the thing. And I think it's one of those things as well that people tend not to go back and look as well. And this is something I'm certainly guilty of throughout betas and so on as well, as I don't always go back and check. And I try to have a list of things that I want to go back and check, but I don't always remember. And one of the things that I've noticed is missing in particular is they threw this in as part of the sort of announcement at the WWDC keynote that Safari on macOS is getting profiles. So you'll be able to have like a work profile and a personal profile, allowing you to be logged into, say, two Google accounts at the same time. Lovely idea. 10 out of 10 in favor of that. This is in addition to tab groups.
Yeah.
So I'm there going, brilliant. Love it. And you guessed it, folks. There's no shortcuts actions for this. There's no Apple scripts.
No automation.
This. There's nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things of like, I just wanted like the support for that, because Safari on Mac is unfortunately lagging behind Safari on iOS and iPadOS with regards to shortcuts actions. And it's just one of those things of, you know, if they brought out the shortcuts actions for the new stuff without bringing it in for the old stuff, I would still have been a grumpy. But like, there's just no shortcut sections for Safari on macOS, at least no new ones, and they haven't been in a while. It's just, I would really like to see those sooner rather than later.
Yes, and like selecting a tab group, which is, I talked about this 2 weeks ago on the show. I just don't understand how that didn't. The action exists on the iPhone and the iPad. It would make these types of setup scripts I write so much easier if I could say, and open Safari and give me all the tabs to do this thing. And you can do that manually. You can tell it, open this up. But when you have tab groups and they're already all set up for you, wouldn't it be easier just to say, open up the tab group for, you know, writing a sales proposal or, you know, scheduling the soccer game?
It really would. And I have a feeling, you know, because reminders and notes, for example, have the same actions across iOS and iPadOS and macOS. And I love that. That's great. I have a feeling that the real reason for that is underneath, notes and reminders got a rewrite on macOS, and they are now the same app, where Safari is still two separate animals on iOS and macOS, making that sort of thing much more complicated. And if you remember back a few years, the Things app would have things for iPhone actions and things for iPad actions and things for Mac actions. And if you wanted to have the same shortcut work on your iPhone and your iPad, a lot of people worked around that by just installing things for iPhone on their iPad as well, so that the shortcuts actions would just run and that would be it. And that's certainly a way to work around it, but doesn't work on Mac. Unfortunately, you know, the shortcuts team, and I'm guessing the operating system teams as well, worked together to figure out a way that you could then get everything together so that those same actions, you know, the add task to things or whatever the equivalent would be, can be the same action across platforms. Clearly, the Safari team are taking advantage of this to an extent, but I don't know if it's just that the Safari for Mac team are totally overwhelmed with everything else that they've got to do, or just the underlying infrastructure isn't there to support doing this kind of automation on Mac, or maybe they just think that the people don't want it on the Mac, and therefore they're not investing in the time in it, in which case I feel like it's kind of a chicken and the egg problem. People won't use it because it's not there, and they won't add it because people won't use it. We all remember what happened to the Microsoft Windows phone, right, folks? It doesn't exist anymore. Chicken and the egg problem. There were no apps because there were no users, no users because there were no apps. It's one of those things of if there were parity across these things, then it would be a lot easier to, you know, say to people, you know, like, yeah, you should really give this a try. Don't worry if you decide after a while that you want to get a Mac from your iPad, everything that you do there will just work. Because at the moment, like, it's so close to there, but it's not quite.
Well, I would encourage you that if you are using the betas and the ability to choose tab groups or switch between user modes on Safari is something you'd like to do on your Mac, submit feedback. You know, I think the more they hear of that, the more likely it is to get some engineering time.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm sad about that. I really am. I felt like that was a gimme. I feel like, oh, we're definitely going to get that this year. Because I was kind of, generally in the past, a lot of times they add new features and we get the shortcut support a year later. Like, they're just getting to the, you know, they're just getting it done in time to get it out with the release. But then they've got another year, so the shortcuts team, or whoever makes the actions, can kind of go and sweep up afterwards and get the actions. But we didn't even get it after a year, which makes me wonder, you know, is it just a choice not to do it? Or, you know, and, you know, who knows? We're on the outside. It could also just be that, like Rose said, it's technically impossible or something. But I just hope that they get that, because that would make my my automation ability and the ability to share usable automation with people who aren't necessarily super nerdy a lot easier.
Yeah.
Same thing goes for the email box selection. It's just like, it's so nice to have a script that opens your mail application to the exact box that you want it to. And we have that on iPhone and iPad, and we don't have it on the Mac. And I just don't know why, but my guess is, you know, it's the same story. You know, they're two different apps and it's not as easy as porting one thing to the next. You've got to like write new code, and for whatever reason, they haven't done it yet.
And especially if you've got two separate teams, you know, working on, you know, the Mac app and the iOS app, which is entirely possible. Even if there's, you know, some crossover between them with code and or developers, you know, it doesn't mean that it's easy to do at all. So, you know, I'm not blaming the developers for that. I just wish somebody could prioritize this somewhere in the chain so that we would get it, because I'm sure those folks are just as frustrated as we are that these things aren't there.
Well, it's just hard because I want more people to use shortcuts. But every time you have this lack of parity between platforms, you're like, well, wait a second. I could make a shortcut for that on my phone. How come I can't do that on my Mac? It's just one more way you lose them along the way. And I just would like to, somewhere at Apple, there should be a list of everything on the iPhone that's not on the Mac. And somebody should, you know, get a big whiteboard and just start checking those off for us. That would be great. That's all. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give you some work. Let's talk about the Apple Watch. There are some nice changes with this Apple Watch. I'm just going to go out right in front of this one. I've been using the beta watch. I think this is the best improvement to the watchOS that has happened yet.
I'm glad you're saying that, David. I don't disagree that it's great, but oh my God, is my muscle memory broken? It's so broken. Like I'll like raise my wrist to swipe across to look at my watch and go, oh right, okay, cool. But I actually want a different watch face right now. I would like another watch face, and so I go to swipe. Nothing happens because now you tap and hold, and then you can switch between the watch faces, which is fine. Like I'm cool with that. Like I don't mind it, but it's the same as like swiping up from the control center. It gives me widgets. Swiping down still gives me notifications, but you now press the side button to get your control center. Just the fact that I can't swipe up to get to things like ping my iPhone, which it turns out I do a lot more than I thought I did.
Yeah.
It has broken my muscle memory a bit, but this is also a good thing because, it's encouraged me to explore my watch faces a little bit more, and play with things a bit more. And I've actually added some new shortcuts to my library, which I run from complications so that from certain watch faces, I can just go, you know, tap this to do this thing that you might otherwise do from the control center. In particular, like setting my phone into certain do not disturb modes or focus modes. That's one of the things that I do. That's something that's very useful to have on hand for me.
Yeah. And just so to be clear, traditionally they had on the watch, I think what they called a dock. And it was, I think, about 8 apps that you could select for the dock. And if you hit the button below the digital crown, you could scroll through those and work on them. And now it's much more like the old Siri watch face. You don't push the button. Instead, you just turn the wheel of the digital crown. And it just brings up apps that it thinks you should see. Like if you have a calendar appointment coming up soon, it'll show. If you've got a timer running, it'll show. It's contextually aware, so it gives you generally, accurately, in my experience, what you need to see most. You can long press on that and add specific apps to it. There's not, you know, third-party support yet because the third-party apps are in early beta for this release.
That's not entirely true, David. So I found there are a couple of apps that do have support for this already. One of them is one of our favorite apps. It's Timery. Timery already has support. I am running the Timery beta, but I was running the Timery beta beforehand. But I believe what this comes from is the large watch complication for the modular face. And you needed to be using like the latest thing to create that when you edit that. But Timery has support. I've noticed Airmail, Secure Shellfish, Oura, a couple of other apps as well, like Home Plus. So some of it does explicitly say shows watch complications, and other stuff is just kind of like it is just showing up. So I don't know what magic these developers have done, but congratulations to you if you are one of the developers that's done this and you followed the Apple guidelines of when they were talking. They did this years ago. They were talking about auto layout, and they were like, yeah, auto layout's great. Like if you use auto layout, then when stuff changes, then it just all kind of like magically snaps into place. And some developers were like, yeah, great, I'm hopping on this auto layout bandwagon. And other developers, no, I'm going to stick with what I'm doing. You know, it works, it's fine. And then the next year, Apple introduces split screen for iPadOS, which, by the way, if you're running auto layout, it's going to be pretty simple to just update this and you'll be good to go. And all the developers who'd hard coded everything would, it feels like that, where, you know, whoever was using the latest widget kit stuff and complication stuff for the Apple Watch maybe got a bit of a freebie here. Hope, fingers crossed for you developers, that it is indeed a freebie, but it's pretty nice to see that there's apps already in my watch with these fancy widgets.
And there is a limit. You can add apps to the scrolling list, but I think it's again around 8. But I did hit the limit on mine and said, no, you can't add any more. But it's still, even with it maxed out, it's giving me the information I need. Like I run timers all day. And historically, I've run a lot of information dense watch faces because I have all this stuff going on and I just want to see it. I have found that using a simpler watch face, like, you know, an analog dial face, which is what I personally prefer. Mm-hmm. But being able to just hit the crown and scroll to get me anything I need about upcoming appointments or whatever, I find that is a really good compromise. And it's going to really work for me. It's going to allow me to use less dense faces, and I think a lot of people are going to be big fans of this. Now, the button that would historically open that dock now, that brings up the control center that people had to swipe up for before. And I understand where Rose is coming from on that, because if you're a power user, you've known for years that you just swipe up from the bottom to get to that control center. I think a lot of people didn't know that though, you know, and I feel like Apple wanted to make it more deliberate. And now you push that button. But because I'm jumping between focus modes all day, I find it just fine on the button. That's cool. Because my watch is one of my favorite places to change a focus mode. And you just lift your wrist, push the button, change the focus mode, and you're off to the races.
Yeah, for me and my family, like I've observed my parents as well, and they definitely swipe up to, do things like, in particular, turn on like theater mode or cinema mode, as it's now called, or ping their devices, or check battery life, things like that. I know you can put battery life in a complication, but they definitely swipe up for those things as well. So, it's going to be interesting seeing what happens there for folks. I think some people will be fine with it. Some people are not so fine with it.
Yeah, some people are going to be like, what happened to that thing, you know?
Yeah. But as it is what it is. It's going to change. I suspect my grandmother, who does use this as well, she will be getting a little less confused that she swiped upwards and now there's stuff. And then she pressed the crown, but sometimes she pressed and hold it for too long and that would start the countdown of calling the emergency services, at which point she'd let go and panic and then call me and say, I think I phoned 999 again. And no, it's fine. Unless it actually called 999. If you let go while it said, it was counting down, you're okay. Don't panic. It's all good. But just one of those things.
So it sounds like you're not quite as bullish on the new phone operating system as I am.
Well, I think, I'm excited for all of these things. And we're just going to have to kind of see what happens with it. Because as it is right now, we're recording this towards the end of June. We've got until September until this actually comes out. And I'm excited by what I'm seeing. I don't think this is necessarily the end. There is always something that we don't know about that's hidden in there. So we'll see what comes out in September when they announce the new iPhones, because there's some sneaky hidden feature in there that we didn't know. But as it is, I'm feeling, pretty happy about what I'm seeing so far. It can only get better from here on out. I definitely just say though, for anybody who is running the beta and they're running into issues, please don't forget that there's a feedback button thing, and you can actually add it to your control center on your iPhone as well. So it's easy, really, really easy to file feedback. It's one of those things where, it's not perfect, but nothing's perfect, but things can only get better, right?
Always. We're going to talk about watch faces today and Automator's Max, but I have a lot of questions for you on that as well. Okay, so now that you've been using the betas for a while, what's missing for you? That is a loaded question because I already have an answer. I want more out of the Apple basic productivity apps. I feel like this year was a bit of a letdown. The last several years, they've made nice improvements to Notes, Reminders, Apple Mail. Apple's just really, I think, been on a good trajectory with that stuff. And this year, it feels like they lost a bit of their momentum, both in terms of features to those applications and automation support.
I think it's one of those things where it's really difficult to get things right. I feel like they have hit, at least for the time being, the peak with reminders and where reminders can go. And I'm not saying that as a power user. The power user in me is like, there's so much more you can add. Hello, defer dates. The regular user inside of me, the person who observes my parents, and my grandmother and so on using this stuff, it's kind of at the point right now where it's about as complex as you can get for a normal user and still be understandable, but have the features where they're like, actually, I quite like a list of all the things that I said that I need to, like, I want to do at this location. And it sort of crosses that boundary relatively nicely at the moment, where those features are there if you're looking for them, but they're not in your way and in your face if you don't. And this is something that I've observed generally with productivity tools. When people open up something that they've heard is great and amazing, and then they're like, oh, God, this is complicated. Like, what is, like, there's so much stuff here, and there's columns, but they're empty because I didn't put anything in them. Do I have to put something in them? Things like that. It gets overwhelming fast. I will say the cross-linking inside Apple Notes is great. I'm really excited by that. And also the PDF annotation there too. I think that that is really nice. That is going to hit like a really good point for a lot of users where they want things like that, but they aren't looking to, you know, use something that, you know, would come under the acronym of PKM, Personal Knowledge Management System, being silent, hidden letter there. So I feel like this is good, especially when combined with the Notes collaboration. It makes Notes into a really powerful tool. So I'm pretty excited by that, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to work backwards on that. For starting with what your comments on Notes, I agree. People who like Rome Research and Obsidian and even Craft are not going to be looking at this as a replacement. It's not nearly as powerful, but the ability to create a link is really great. And they did it in a very simple way. It indexes your notes live, so you can just type in the name of a note and then you're good to go and you've got this link. And I think that is going to be something that lands with people. On reminders, I understand what you're saying, and I hope you're wrong. I feel like there is more room in reminders. You know, I deal with a lot of people in the Max Markey labs who are not necessarily needing a super powerful task manager, but they do want some of the power features. And so many of them are just on the cusp of using reminders. Like, they're using things, but if just reminders gets a little bit better, they want to switch. And I feel like Apple is so close with it. I just want to push them another 10%, you know, like you said, defer dates. And there's just a couple little features they need to add to really make that an app that can scale up for people that want it. And one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is they added essentially Kanban boards to reminders this year. And Rose, have you played with that at all?
I haven't really had a chance, no. I tend to only use reminders. Well, I actually use reminders fairly heavily because it's great when you're driving to be able to say, hey, Apple lady, add this to you, or remind me of this and so on. And then, you know, I have shortcuts in my pushcut automation server just go off and magically sort that stuff so it all ends up in the right places. So a chunk of it ends up in OmniFocus and so on. But I do use reminders for location-based things, specifically like when I get into the car or out of the car, and when I get home things, just because that works. That works pretty well for me. The fact that it then hangs around on my home screen until it's done, and it's just kind of like there and in my face, works very nicely. I do use reminders. I haven't yet used the Kanban stuff simply because I don't have a need for that, because my big task management stuff, like anything that's basically like these things are actually related to each other in one way or another, happens in OmniFocus. The rest of it just happens. The rest of it's just, you know, as it is. But it looks pretty cool to me. And I'm definitely excited to see what people do with this, because I think that this will be very useful.
Well, I just sent you a screenshot, and it's fairly basic, right?
Yeah.
But you can set up a reminder and put it in a column view, or a section view, as they call it, and then you can arrange it by columns. And then you can put subtasks into that reminder and essentially create a little project Kanban. And this is not going to compete again with the bigger players out there that do Kanban, but it's free and it's already on your device. And I really think the magic sauce of this is the sharing. I mean, Reminders is one of the best in class for sharing task lists. You know, if everybody's on an Apple platform, it's just so easy. You push one button, there's no subscription or anything. You just have sharing. And I feel like for project planning, this could be really beneficial with small Apple-based teams. And that's like an advanced feature to me. And so I feel like the fact that they put this in means that there's still some gas in the tank over there to improve reminders. And I hope that's true.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But then you get to the automation side of this. I mean, we're the automators, right? The automation of reminders kind of stinks. Like, I've been playing with this feature because I'm trying to teach about it in the labs. And Like setting up a project in OmniFocus with automation is super easy. You can decide what kind of list is, you know, is it linear? Is it, you know, is it, I forget the terms OmniFocus uses. There is
parallel versus sequential versus single action.
Exactly. Exactly. They don't have anything like that in reminders. And in fact, if you want them to go in a sequential order, you have to put them in reverse because the way Shortcuts renders it, it puts basically, it keeps, it adds, if you give it a subtask, it puts it at the top of the list. Then the next subtask you give it puts it in between that one and the top of the list, and it just keeps pushing them down. But then it doesn't even do that consistently. Mm. So there's like a whole bunch of stuff in here that's like kind of wacky that if anybody was trying to use this at like kind of like second level complexity, it would be obvious that the stuff needs work and it's just not really getting it. And as far as I can tell, there was nothing new really added this year. And I do feel like the automation story for the Apple apps is a letdown.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where they didn't necessarily think that people would be wanting to automate this in the sense of like recreating projects or having like consistent like subtask groups and so on. And when they did think about that, they went, okay, cool, we'll add templates. And templates are really powerful. They're something that I've not really seen in many other applications at all, you know, directly as a feature. Like they exist in many other apps with the, well, if you copy this, it will paste it. It'll put it on your clipboard as, say, task paper, and you can reuse that and things like that. And that's been around for ages. But just to straight up, like, you know, just like save this as a template. Thanks, bye. That's not something that really exists elsewhere. So, you know, I think, you know, they've thought about this, but they've thought about this in the sense of like, okay, inside of our little world and ecosystem without the, okay, but this is potentially a dynamic project or it is a dynamic thing. And depending on exactly what this is, you know, if Bob's involved, I need the Bob list. If Miranda's involved, I need the Miranda list. If Jay's involved, I need the Jay list, etc. And just being able to do that and dynamically even just rename things and so on is, you know, something that has not yet maybe occurred to them is the wrong thing, but not yet made it through the process to be available to us. Because I do know that when you add a reminder, I thought it was when you added a reminder, then you could tell it to put it at the bottom of the list versus the top of the list. And now I'm not seeing that as an option. I thought that you could do that with the reminders, but maybe not anymore. Who knows?
I don't recall that that's ever been an option, but maybe I missed it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I thought I'd seen it, and now maybe I am maybe I'm thinking of something totally different. Because I do know there is a set subtasks. So in the edit reminder, and this is something that's a little weird, you can add subtasks to a particular reminder, which is quite nice. And then it can add multiple things at the same time.
That's the action I'm talking about.
Well, the other thing that you can do, though, is you can add a reminder and set the parent reminder. And depending on how you do that, that works slightly differently. And I think it's just one of those things where, you know, they didn't necessarily think that people would add to the bottom versus add to the top, and just it ended up in whatever default was there, and that was it.
And that's not like that's the hill I'm going to die on, but I feel like that's just kind of an example of where, you know, it's not quite like I don't expect reminders to ever replace a tool like OmniFocus. You know, name your productivity app. There's always some best in class apps out there that really sweat all the little details, and this is more of a consumer thing. But it's just it's interesting to me as they get closer to making something that's really useful for a lot of people. I feel like there's just little bits they're missing, and the automation piece of it to me is the worst of it. I mean, they just need to do more. I feel like Notes is probably the best Apple app with automation in terms of the productivity sphere, but like Apple Mail and Reminders and some of their other, like we talked earlier about Safari, I just feel like there's more work to be done there.
Yes. Yeah, there definitely is. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that over time. You know, I noticed the Tips app got shortcut support. And you might be thinking, well, tips productivity thing, but there was something new added to iOS this year for TipKit, which essentially allows developers to add their own tips into the Tips app and create collections of tips and things like that, and also to just essentially use that framework to explain to a user how to use their app. So if you open, say, for example, a camera app for the first time, it can walk you through, like, this is how you take a photo, this is how you do a video, and so on and so forth, which is, you know, really nice. But you can now also open a particular collection from the Tips app in Shortcuts. And I feel like the fact that that's just got support straight off the bat is a very good sign of these things to come. Because while you and I, David, may find the Tips app not the most useful investment of our time, it is certainly something that plenty of people like end up using. The Tips app gets added to your suggested widget stack and things like that. And so it's good to just see what's there for that. And, you know, fingers crossed, this will end up translating into other things. Though I have to say, I'm a little disappointed. You know, we have the automations for things like messages and emails incoming, but the transaction option does not appear, at least when I last checked it, does not appear to offer details of the transaction to... Oh, now it does. Oh, yay. I'm very pleased to report that I was wrong. So they must have updated this in the latest beta because you get the transaction as an input now that you can pass into your shortcut. So you may actually have some details of the transaction there, because this was something that was missing before and I was kind of sad about that. I was chatting to some developers who are working on some finance stuff. But now that is an option. So that's pretty good to see.
Well, I have to say overall that I am very happy with the progress Shortcuts has made in the years it's been in the Apple platform, particularly on the Mac. Like, when it came on the Mac, there was a part of me that thought I would never really use it much, because I am a power automator. I wrote a book on Keyboard Maestro. I know my way around AppleScript. There's a lot of great options on the Mac. You know, what do I need this, you know, pedestrian themed Shortcuts for? But the fact is, Shortcuts is the best tool in the belt occasionally for automation, and I'm using it a lot more than I thought I would. That's probably why I get wound up about it when it's got the deficiencies, because I want to use it more. Not only do I want to use it more, I want to help more people automate, and I feel like this is the by far the easiest way to get people started.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Either way, I think we're both pretty happy with the betas, though, generally, right?
Yes, yeah, I really am, and I'm really pleased that things are going so well. And, you know, it may not appear on the surface of things that Shortcuts has had a big upgrade, but just the fact that it's all running faster and smoother is a great sign. And yes, there have been hiccups, but there will always be hiccups, and I'm not going to point fingers at any one person or any one team as to where those hiccups are, because it's always a combination of this was, you know, ambiguously documented, and therefore this person interpreted it that way, but the person who wrote it thought it was extremely clear that it was meant that way, and so on and so forth. And therefore this strange combination of things happened and that thing didn't work or whatever. But, you know, we're on the new beta. So that's, you know, we're on the first new release of the beta, and overall my phone's working. My iPad is working. And even the Mac that, I mean, I'll admit that I barely used because I've been off the grid for a couple of weeks. That's been working as well. And that's impressive. You know, I haven't had one of those, like, I just need to, like, grab another device and do this thing moments. And that's great.
Well, I go through this every year. Betas kind of multiply on themselves because the features they have, yeah, then you need them on a different thing to make it work. And every year I try to draw the line at my production machine. In fact, I have to, because one of our key applications, Audio Hijack, is never going to release early. They're dealing with underlying audio stuff and they really have to be careful. But man, I can tell you that it's always an indicator when I wish I had the beta on my production machine, like the widgets on the screen, and like the way, because I've been testing this reminders Kanban view. I'm thinking about implementing a small piece of it with my team, and like not being able to use it on my Mac drives me nuts. So that's a good sign that, you know, this is a good year, and I think anybody who's running the beta, you know, if you've got some spelunking you're doing and things that are important to you, a great place to share that is over at talk.automators.fm. That's our forum. Lots of activity over there.
Yeah.
And Rose and I keep up with it. We'd love to see.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention, I've been chatting to some of the moderators of the Shortcuts subreddit about trying to get some of the content from there across, because, of course, Reddit has decided that they're going to go nuts and charge ridiculous amount of money to access the API, just like Twitter did. And they're looking at seeing if there's a way that we can archive the stuff from Reddit so that folks will have access to it on the Automators forum. So we're looking into something that we can do for that, just to make sure that no great content gets lost, because, you know, all the lovely folks using Shortcuts deserve to have a home to post about it on the internet. And we're very happy to have you all in the Automators forum. It's free and open to anybody using Shortcuts, which hopefully everybody listening to this podcast knows. But yeah, just wanted to make a note of that.
All right. That'll wrap it up for today. Thank you to our sponsor, Electric. Go check them out. We are the Automators Podcast. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. Check out that forum at talk.automators.fm, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.